Oh, hi, podcast listeners. There's many ways you can listen to the Real Nerds Podcast. You can subscribe on iTunes. You can also subscribe on Stitcher Radio. You want to send us a Twitter message? You can do that. It's so easy, at Real Nerds. Like us on Facebook, Real Nerds Podcast. You can visit our website, realnerdspodcast.com, where there'll be a lot of articles for you to not only read, but to listen to our previous shows. Do you like your stories told through pictures? Then you can also follow us at Real Nerds on Instagram. You can also call us, 720-6NERDS5. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show. This is Real Nerds Podcast. We are the best movie podcast on the internet. I am Ryan. I am joined by my hetero life mate, Brad.
What up?
Brad, how are you today?
I'm doing all right. Just getting caught up on things. How you doing?
As you can tell, I definitely am sick, like I said last night.
What's with that? Every time you fly on a plane, you get sick, buddy.
I know, bro. I don't know, and it's always sinus. Like, I don't feel bad. Like, I don't know how to describe it. I don't feel bad.
That's what I had, like, last week. I had a scratchy throat, but, like, it never went anywhere further like it usually does.
Same. When I was in Virginia with my kid, he had a stuffy nose, but he never had a fever, and he never told me that he felt really bad. And I think I got the same thing he did. Like, I don't feel bad. I just sound like I'm a fucking idiot. And it's every time I freaking travel.
It's the humanity just spreads germs.
It does.
I'm glad I sat next to you yesterday because I'm pretty sure 5 days from now I'm going to be like, my sinuses don't feel good.
No, that's definitely what's going to happen.
Then
what are you going to do, right?
Just perfect luck for you to have this situation when you're talking about one of your favorite movies ever.
Yeah, I pulled a butthead move. I don't know. So this week, you know, we should have probably seen Civil War, but I really didn't feel like seeing that type of movie. And I mean, I'll see it eventually because it looks interesting. But Spider-Man, the cinematic Spider-Mans are being re-released in theaters. And
every Monday for the next, I don't know, 8 weeks.
Yeah. So I decided that would be a perfect opportunity to review one of my favorite films ever. 2002 Spider-Man is our film of the week. We'll recommend the film or not, play the trailer and spoil a 21-year-old movie.
Recommend the film or not? Are you kidding me?
Yeah, I know. We should probably just talk about it. I don't know. Because I was talking to you yesterday and I said, man, I don't think I've seen this in theaters since it came out. I mean, I think I saw it 5 or 6 times in the theater when it came out. I own every, version of it on home video. I have 3 or 4 DVDs, 3 Blu-rays, and one set of the 4Ks. But Spider-Man's my favorite character. Spider-Man was one of the coolest experiences I've ever had as a moviegoer. And I thought it was a really cool time to revisit the film. And it was almost sold out. It might have been sold out. When we got tickets, when they came out a while ago, there wasn't very many people in the theater than yesterday. Man, it was packed.
Yeah, it's close to sold out, I think. So, 4 o'clock on a Monday, it's like, I don't know how this many people found the time. Like, that's how popular Spider-Man is.
And it seems, I'm surprised they haven't exploited, you know, these movies before.
putting him out, because he is the one of the most beloved characters ever. And I mean, it's evidenced by all how well all his movies do. So yeah, it's interesting that they didn't, you know, put them out before had director's cuts of it or whatever.
And I think it not being in theaters regularly, you know, for the past 20 years also, you know, contributed to, hey, it's out, I got to go see it, you know, 4 o'clock on a Monday.
Yeah, but, you know, the other movies are being sold really well, too. I didn't buy them all at once because, you know, my schedule, I have to make sure I can actually go to the movie. And so I started just picking up some random ones again. And I got Far From Home, and it's about the same amount of people that were in Spider-Man. So I'm excited. I like that he's back in the public consciousness, and I hope that this is a build up to at Comic-Con. They're going to announce the new Spider-Man movie, which would make me happy.
I figured the, the first three, and maybe like the amazing ones would probably sell well, just because, you know, they don't end up in the theater a lot. And I figured like the most recent three would be like, oh yeah, I just saw those like 3 to 4 years ago, so no big deal. But yeah, apparently it doesn't matter.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it's cool as a Spider-Man fan. It's awesome. But, you know, too, time goes by so fast because they were putting out, you know, a new Spider-Man in MCU. I mean, there was a time that Spider-Man was had a movie every year from like 2016 to 2021 with one break in 2020 for the COVID pandemic.
Yeah.
Between, you know, his appearances in the MCU and his animated films, he kept popping up.
They talk about, like, you know, Star Wars fatigue or Marvel fatigue, but, you know, those movies came out like once every 3 years. And then, Spider-Man here is pretty versatile because, like you said, some variation of Spider-Man was out in theaters each of those years.
Which is a trip. And like I've always said, I think he's the greatest fictional character of all time. And I think he resonates with people. As the, you know, the one of us kind of hero. You know, your favorite's Batman, and I think Batman is always so popular because he has no superpowers. His superpower is his wanting to find justice.
And his infinite cash flow.
But it's great to be a Spider-Man fan right now.
Yeah, should we play the 2002 trailer and then just talk about this one?
Yeah, let's do it.
Who am I? You sure you want to know? If somebody told you I was just your average, ordinary guy, not a care in the world, somebody lied. Truth is, it wasn't always like this. There was a time when life was a lot less complicated. Can I take your picture for the school paper?
Sure. In this lab, we have 15 genetically enhanced super spiders.
There's 14. One's missing.
Peter, are you all right?
I'm fine.
Pete, look, you're changing. I know I went through exactly the same thing at your age.
No, not exactly.
Wow.
Peter, may I introduce my father, Norman Osborn?
Great honor to meet you, sir.
Harry tells me you're quite the science whiz. You know, I'm something of a scientist myself.
What the hell was that?
Whatever it is, somebody has to stop it.
With great power comes great responsibility.
This is my gift.
Wow.
It is my curse.
Who are you?
Who am I? I'm Spider-Man.
Do I get to say thank you this time?
Thank you.
too much. You're not Superman, you know.
But it wasn't always the case, Brad. Spider-Man had a bumpy road to get to the big screen. I saw this film at midnight the day it came out at Denver West. RIP, Denver West United Artists. Yep. And I remember vividly, because I'm sure you're like me, your favorite characters, properties, you want to do well so you can see more. And so I saw it at midnight, which meant I got home probably 2:33 in the morning, and I had to go back. I was the head waiter at Outback at the time, and I had to balance the books, quote unquote. So I had to go in before the restaurant opened and made sure all the cash and all the credit cards we had from the night before balanced. And I remember saying, man, that show was sold out. That's pretty awesome. And I went to the Outback, was at the top of the Denver West parking lot. And as I was driving, the line to get see Spider-Man at like 8 in the morning went all the way to Soundtrack at the end of the parking lot. And wow. I'm not talking about, oh, it's just next door. That's like a good, you know, half a mile, quarter of a mile.
Trying to paint a picture for people who don't live in Golden. Yeah. I guess in between the movie theater and Soundtrack, eventually Ultimate Electronics, there's like a Barnes & Noble, a Jamba Juice.
Whole Foods. What was it before?
Office Max.
It used to be, it's World Market now. I forget what it was before. Was it a TJ Maxx or something?
Oh, God. Yeah, I don't know. I really didn't pay attention to that. A couple of those stores. It's a DSW now.
But it's a trip because
There's like there's like 10 stores in between the movie theater and where you're talking about.
Yeah. That style is, I mean, you won't have it anymore now because you have reserved seats and stuff. But I remember saying, oh my gosh, I think this movie is going to be really big. And you don't even remember in 2002, no film had opened over $100 million at the box office until Spider-Man, which opened with 114.
I can't even imagine people in this day and age like having the patience to stand there like in that long of a line for a movie.
Did you do it? I remember the first time I really did it was for The Phantom Menace in 1999.
Yeah,
at Denver West, I remember sitting in line and then getting in early because we helped Joe's girlfriend Beverly, who was the manager there. And so we skipped everybody in line. It was awesome. Just some context of how cool Spider-Man is. And if you don't know the film, it's the origin story of Spider-Man, also of the Green Goblin, and they fight. But what is really cool, and I was talking to you yesterday, the movie still, I mean, it's one of my favorite films, so I'm always going to love it, but it holds up so incredibly well. Because how innovative it is and how fresh it still feels when you watch it.
Yeah, the same, like, I guess the other context is like in this time, 2002, like the only other like great superhero movie of this era is like X-Men. Like, they don't even have the other Marvel, Daredevil, Punisher, like none of those are out yet. And then before that, like the only good stuff you've had is like Superman and four Batmans, two of which are like bleh.
Because it was Batman and Robin 97.
Yeah.
So even then you had a huge like gap between, I mean, I think Blade came out in 98.
Oh yeah, there's Blade, yeah.
But that's hard to sell as a straight comic book movie. Because it's such a horror action kind of thing that doesn't lean into the comic books as much.
Yeah. So then X-Men hit and like it did well enough. And then, Spider-Man just like entered a new era of, oh my God, these can be amazing. And, a lot of that's done through it's such a visually inventive piece. Like I was just marveling at all the, a lot of those shots hadn't, like they seem standard now, but like back then, like they're pretty dynamic.
Yeah, and you know, I will say our theater's projection was really dark.
Oh, was it?
Yeah. I mean, maybe it's because I'm used to watching it on 4K, but
I wonder if it was because it was supposed to be in 35 millimeter and they couldn't get it up and running. Maybe the projection for 35 millimeter is darker.
Oh, maybe.
For some reason.
What I really noticed is the Green Goblin's like purple highlights didn't pop as much. And when he's talking to Spider-Man on the roof, you can't see his mouth as well.
But then again, I also so wonder, like at home, you know, I imagine it's just brighter because you have like a 4K rear projection.
Oh, maybe, yeah.
TV. So maybe that's like, you know, the front projection. It'll also be like they didn't, like they had it set for 35 in the last minute, didn't set like the brightness back or something. I don't know.
Maybe. I mean, it still looked great. I mean, I even still laugh at some of the corniness, you know. And now Macy Gray.
I know. I have all no corporate idea why tie she
and stuff. There. Yeah.
She had a record deal with Sony.
Yeah. You know, and then I call it the 9/11 remix, where the Goblin is attacking Spider-Man and Spider-Man is saved by New Yorkers. And they say, you mess with one of us, you mess with all of us. I'd be curious to know if that scene is actually in the original film.
Yeah, that feels like it was a last minute addition. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it was supposed to come out in 2001 and then they delayed it like 6 months, right?
I don't know. I think it was always supposed to come out in 2002, but I think maybe they did have to delay it because the climax took place at the World Trade Center. I don't know. I'm reading a book right now called With Great Power, which is the making of the Spider-Man films. And I just got into this one because it actually goes back to those 70s ones that we see the trailers for all the time.
Like Italian Spider-Man and everything.
Yeah. It's a pretty cool little book. But yeah, I mean, this movie's awesome. Tobey Maguire as Peter Parker does so well as that kind of bookish nerd guy who tries to understand his place in the world and, you know, learns the lesson with great power must come great responsibility. And it's handled so well in the film. Cliff Robertson, who plays Uncle Ben, is incredible in his little scream time in the film.
I was just thinking about that line. There was a point where you heard it all the time. And now that I think about it, I really haven't like heard it that much in pop culture. Like, even though you've had tons of Spider-Man movies, like they really haven't repeated that for like the past 10 or 15 years. And I kind of feel like people need to hear that again.
Oh, yeah, I agree. That's why, I cry every time I watch No Way Home when Aunt May dies and she says that to him. And I go, oh my gosh. I think James Franco's really good in the film as the conflicted.
It's so weird seeing him as like a baby face because
I know.
Spoilers from what I've been watching. I saw Spring Breakers this week. It's just like,
oh shit. That's way different.
Yep. Yeah, good job of I don't remember like paying attention to his story as much. The first when I saw it in theaters in 2002, and the second time around, I noticed it more.
Yeah, like
his duel with his father, I guess, in some ways.
Yeah, you know, I love too his kind of turn towards the end of the film. Because I think Harry Osborn's one of the greatest Spider-Man villains ever because he's so conflicted. And I think the films did a really great job of conveying that. When Norman comes over for Thanksgiving and he figures out Pete is Spider-Man and he says those horrible things about Mary Jane. And when Harry comes back in, he's like switches to Norman Osborn-esque where he tells, Mary Jane keep her mouth shut about stuff she doesn't understand. And that's his turn, I guess, to the dark side. Because he even inadvertently tells Norman that, you know, Peter cares about Mary Jane more than anybody. in kind of a non-truthful way about how he was wronged.
Yeah.
And it carries over for the next two films.
That's kind of one of the goofy things for me, though, looking back on it. Like, Harry sees them briefly holding hands in, like, Aunt May's hospital room. Like, that's the thing that sends him over the edge. Like he couldn't think that, oh, she's consoling him because, you know, his Aunt May's hurt. Like, that was his first thing, is, like, they're cheating on him. Like, really? Like, that's kind of like a real rush to judgment thing. And then later
on...
Huh?
Go ahead. Sorry.
Now, another goofy thing is, you know, when Spider-Man drops off Norman Osborn to their penthouse, and like they just keep a gun in the side table in the room, just like it's just there, ready to go.
Well, I will say this:
always,
Brad, in my career and doing search warrants, there's always a gun right there, and a dildo. And that is 100% true. But yeah,
it just makes me think there's like one stashed like in every drawer.
Yeah.
Wherever you need it, based on the positioning you might find yourself in at any moment in a rich person's penthouse that not a ton of people go to. Yeah.
I know every time I see when, you know, Pete lays down Norman's body, my mind immediately goes to Spider-Man 3 when his butler goes,
oh God,
Harry, like the worst exposition. I would have just cut that. I have no idea why they left that in the movie.
I feel bad talking about that guy, but it just felt like he won a contest. Like Sony, like he collected enough coupons. We got to put him in there. We got to honor the deal.
Funny story. It's Bill Paxton's dad.
Oh,
so I don't know if Sam Raimi's friends with Bill Paxton or was.
I was telling someone yesterday about there's this, we got tickets. We're seeing the old Spider-Man movies every Monday for the next few weeks. And he's like, oh man, I don't know if I could do Spider-Man 3. I was like, yeah, I don't know if I could do it either. And then I brought up that scene of like, I'll never forget that old man's delivery of, basically like if he just told Harry Osborn that the night prior. Of, yeah, we could have saved him a lot of
maybe
trouble.
Maybe he would have been a Goblin Jr.
Yeah, I know. Could have resolved that in the first movie. Anyway, yeah, it's just like, I always read that as like Sam Raimi was so pissed off at having to shoehorn Venom into his movie that he's like, I'm just going to make this the worst.
Spider-Man 3 isn't that bad. There's
not overall, but I feel like there's parts of it where he's just like, oh, fuck this.
Oh, yeah. There's parts of it that definitely don't hold up as well. That's one of them. I always tease people because everybody loves Venom for some reason. That's literally Venom's story. So I don't know why people always get rag on how Venom is they don't like Venom in there. And I mean, he was shoehorned in, but that's literally his story. He's a rival reporter and Spider-Man exposes a secret and he turns into Venom.
Yeah, I think it's also too, apparently, the people who like these movies hate comedy. So when you have Spider-Man dancing in the streets, that's going to piss him off. And
you know, I was wondering, I haven't bought a ticket for Spider-Man 3 yet, but it's because of the meme culture. Does that movie become more acceptable now? Because, you know, it's in the new Spider-Man animated movie and
it's probably coming back around.
Yeah,
but it was like so hated that opening weekend when they saw that. I remember just like all the internet stuff was just being like, you know, after two successful movies, they were ready to like crucify Sam Raimi for that one scene.
Yeah, what I always say too is I think people misread that scene too, because it's Peter's perception of himself at that point. And if you look at the people are around him, they look at him like he's a doofus.
Yeah.
So it's part of what the symbiote does to him. But, you know, it's all good. I do, too. I love the climax in the original Spider-Man where the Green Goblin gives him a choice, you know, save the kids or save Mary Jane.
Yeah, I told you this before. It's funny how, in my mind, the whole battle seemed more epic, but it's really, like, very intimate.
Yeah.
By today's standards, you know.
And, you know, I think surprisingly pretty violent too.
Yeah.
The hits really connect in it.
Those right before the movie started, they brought in like a couple, I don't know, 6-7 year olds sat in the front row in front of us, and the movie opened with that like Italian Spider-Man with like the rat eating the guy's face.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't know if I should use, they should use this for the, and then yeah, like Norman Osborn gets impaled by those glider blades. I was like, huh.
In the dick.
Yeah. It is really low.
Yeah.
On his body. Yeah. I was thinking that too. It's like, I don't know if there's any vital organs right there. Like, worst case scenario, his hip is just like shattered.
Maybe it severed an artery in his leg or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I'll go with that. Yeah. What else about this movie?
No, this movie's great. I fucking love this movie. You know, just, and it's the little things that I always loved about it. When the Green Goblin appears at that World's Unity, whatever, Macy Gray concert, just the little subtleties of when he's on the glider and how he moves and his hand runs against the balloons and how he steers the glider. It's just like the little details that are awesome. And what I love about this movie too is it proved that for the most part, I mean, the Green Goblin isn't comic accurate, but Spider-Man is. I remember that was a big thing, is, you know, back in the day, even with Batman, oh, are you going to make his costume look like it does in the comics? And people slowly learned is, yeah, you should, because it's awesome. You know, good design is good design.
Yeah.
You know, there's that X-Men joke where it says, what do you want it to be, in yellow spandex?
Well,
and here we are in 2024, and Wolverine will be in yellow spandex.
Yeah, but even then, like, they've upgraded it. You know, they've added better details, because, you know, if they've done yellow spandex in like the 70s and 80s, and yeah, it looks goofy as hell, but
yeah,
there's just like a balance of trying to like make it look good for film and then honoring, you know, the lack of detail on the page.
Yeah.
I think that's the thing, is like on the page, you know, for a long time, it was just, you know, four colors and, you know, outlines. And then you've got the camera, which picks up tons of detail. So
yeah, true.
Right now they figured out how to balance that, of like, whereas, you know, when they're making Batman, you know, it's probably black just to hide all the shoddy effects that they had from the low budget they had at the time. You know,
isn't that crazy to think that Batman didn't have a huge budget?
Yeah, like the first one for sure.
They
went on returns, but yeah, the first one, yeah, I think it was like $50 million or something, which is still big for an 89, but not blockbuster big.
Yeah, but not enough.
Yeah, I know. Well, I mean, like minimum enough, today is like movie. Like what was Spider-Man's budget in 2002?
Oh, I'm guessing probably 140. I don't know. We can, you know. There's a great resource for this called IMDb. What else were you looking at in 2002, Brad? What else did you think was cool?
Like in general or Spider-Man?
Yeah. Yeah. Just in general. Take us
2002?
Back.
2002? Gosh. Yeah. I mean, that's the summer Attack of the Clones came out, so that's not that cool. I mean, that was when I saw the Yoda fight back then, it was cool, but watching the movie now, it's tough for me.
I haven't seen that in a while. Maybe I'll watch that tonight with Kellen.
You know, Minority Report came out that summer. That was cool. Men in Black 2 came out. That was not cool. Lilo and Stitch was great. Road to Perdition.
Yep.
Austin Powers and Goldmember, not as fun as Spy Who Shagged Me.
So the budget for Spider-Man is $139 million.
Yeah, so pretty hefty.
I mean, probably adjusted for inflation, probably $250.
And ticket prices, I'm looking at my list of 2002 tickets. It's $6 for me.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, so they made that money on a bunch of us seeing it for $6.
Yeah,
probably $7 for everyone else, because I think I was still getting student price, even though I was out of high school. Yeah, what else about Spider-Man?
It's awesome and everybody should see it.
Yeah, I'd forgotten that Mary Jane and Harry dated in that first movie.
Yeah, she dates everybody.
At least the third one make more sense. I mean, I probably understood it back then, but like I'd totally forgotten since then that that was the thing, that they were fighting over each other even that far back.
Yeah, she was mean. She's mean in Spider-Man 3.
But this one sets up that she's a very lost person because she had a horrible, correct, horrible upbringing, and it was kind of cringy to watch her deliver at the end of the movie. You know, when I was up there and I was almost going to die, I was only thinking about you, Peter Parker. And it's just like, I don't know. It seemed like a lot of, other than it just felt like a trauma response more than a, like she'd seen all the good things that he'd done for her throughout the movie.
Yeah. And, you know, no one talks about how mature and how he, to your point, recognizes that. And that, does she really love him? You know what I mean?
Oh, I thought all he was thinking about was like, because he had like, you know, two people that he loved. Like, if he's going to keep being Spider-Man, he can't be close to people or else, you know, they'll always be in danger because he's Spider-Man. I thought that's what was going through his mind at the time.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both. Because yeah. Peter's, you know, such a good guy.
Yeah, but yeah, it's mature.
Because it's a burn, too.
Say no to her at that point.
That's a really good friend. Burn! Yeah. I will say the lady who sat next to me, she was young. I didn't say lady, I should say young woman. I sneezed in the theater and she said, bless you, which was really nice. And then she was really into the movie. And at the end, when Spidey is swinging through the city, she was clapping her hands. And I go, you see, even one person can make a difference. It's just cool to see that this movie still resonates that way. Because, you know, she had to have seen it before. Do you think she went into it cold? I don't know.
No way to know without asking her.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to be that guy, though.
Have you seen this before?
Yeah. Did you happen to notice that? Everybody should see Spider-Man.
There's a screening for the true fans. You seem a little too young to have understood this movie in 2002.
Oh, I will say something funny, totally off topic, but you just reminded me. When Kellen and I were in Virginia, we went to Busch Gardens, and we were getting on the train that goes around it. And the guy who, or the kid who did the safety announcement, sounded like Neil Goldman on the Family Guy. He's going, and make sure you keep your hands inside the vehicle at all times. And then these kids got up and ran around, and then he started... he kicked the family off because they were being unsafe, and he's being super nice. He's like, sir, you need to step away from the train. I go, oh man, this is awesome. Fucking Neil Goldman deluxe.
That's hilarious.
It's great.
Oh God. I wish you'd said something to him, like quote of the show to him, like as you left or something.
Yeah, I know. But I felt bad for him. These people were being really mean to him because he just said, I'm just doing my job. Because if I'm guessing there is some protocol that if they don't listen during the safety announcement and you get off and run on the tracks, that you can't be on the ride.
Seems like a solid policy.
Yeah. Yeah. So he's being picked on by these people. I felt really bad for him. He had to have been like maybe 17, 16, 17 years old. So yeah, we also talk about movie news that I didn't mention at the beginning of the show. Here's the big movie news of the week.
It's real news.
Well, Brad, OJ Simpson is dead and no one cares. The
that's your news story.
No, I was taking a shot at OJ.
I guess he was in movies.
He was. He's in The Naked Gun, and it's really weird seeing him be really silly when you know he's a murderer.
He was acquitted, sir.
Yeah, there's
in
a great
the eyes
book,
of the law. He did not do it.
That is correct. Everybody's innocent until proven guilty. There's a great book. It's what the OJ Made in America was based off of. For some reason, I can't remember the name of the book, but it's really great, and it tells you why OJ is the person who killed him. There's tons of evidence against him. Anyways, no, the CinemaCon happened this last week out in Las Vegas, and is that a private event? Because that seems like something that'd be fun to go to.
I think you have to be a theater exhibitor to go to that.
Let's pretend we are.
Is that what that is?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the real point of it is they're basically pitching movie theaters on why you have to put this many screens to Wicked or whatever in the theaters.
Yeah, you have to be part of NATO and its partner associations.
Huh. Let's just sneak in.
Just make some fake badges. Yeah. NATO on them. Well, I guess Bug Theater, maybe I could register us into NATO and
do it.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
Yeah, it's there wasn't anything like too shocking.
Are you sure? Wait, are you sure though? It's $625 for the lowest tier.
Oh, fuck.
Oh, no, wait. You don't have to be, because there's a non-member tier for industry affiliates and association ineligible. And then association eligible non-member.
Yeah, that's us. We do a movie podcast.
So if you want to pay $800 for just a trade show pass and not the seminars package, all that, like the highest one is $1,695.
Holy shit.
And then if you buy them after April 3rd, which add $200 to all those prices, it's expensive.
Wow. Well, I mean, I guess they got to get everybody out there.
The screenings and studio presentations are under the domestic package. So even if you get the cheapo trade show pass, you only get to go to the trade show. No food functions, no screening, cool. Studio presentations. Oh, man. Well, you want to start pouring extra money into that Real Nerds fund
each month? Yeah, I'm good. I mean, if I knew for certain I was going to get a Paramount keychain, then maybe. Let's get a booth there, and we're just going to have one business card.
I don't think they have, like, booths.
Well, that's what a trade show is.
Well, for, like, podcasters, and like, I think they only have booths for, like, Warner Brothers and, you know, Paramount stuff.
That was an office joke when, you know, they're at the trade show and Michael just brings one piece of paper.
Oh, sorry.
And I said, are you sure you just want to bring one piece of paper? And you went, Pam, Pam, Pam.
And you sneezed my tea. Do you remember that, Michael? No, I don't. Kind of sounds a little. Yeah. So CinemaCon happened.
Yeah. And they just announced a few things. They're going to. Blumhouse is going to, I don't know if they're going to reboot or do something with Blair Witch, which we have interviews with the directors of Blair Witch on our website. You should listen to them. They're really good interviews.
Yeah.
I think the making of Blair Witch is way better than the actual movie. I think the movie is obnoxious. But the story behind how they made it and how it became a hit is really cool. And it also kicked off the whole found footage thing and the limited narrative structure of that genre of film.
But they also already remade it.
They did.
Which is interesting. So I don't know how they're going to remake it.
I mean, I would make a straight one. I wouldn't make it found footage, would be how I would do it.
So
I wouldn't make it
Book of Shadows?
I would make it so
a sequel
ambiguous. I'd make it some nasty ass witch in the fucking forest that rips people in half or something.
That's what I expected.
Are you listening, Hollywood? Are you listening?
That's what I expected from the original, you know, from the trailers. Like, we're going to learn this lore about, you know, some, all these details about some, you know, legend or something. And no, it's just a bunch of sticks tied together and
Yes.
Screaming.
And then the for some reason, the girl threw away their compass and their map. Yeah. Oh, my God. That's so, remember when he was staring at the corner? That was so scary. I remember I didn't see it in the theaters. I rented it at Blockbuster. And I remember watching it. I go, what a piece of shit. I never was scared. I never got that sense of dread. Hats off to the, the filmmakers obviously knew what they were doing. It tapped it into some sort of, I don't know what you would call it, but it
was
worked.
Unlike anything, you know, majority of audiences had ever seen before.
True. So if you love Blair Witch, well, then good.
A very effective trailer when you say, like, this is based on a true story when it's really not.
Yep. Well, they also did, you can listen to the interview with Dan Myrick. You know, they launched the website and everything, and maybe the first viral movie, maybe?
Viral campaign, successful yeah. viral campaign for a movie? Yeah, I think so.
Because the website, too, would say that, you know, these people were missing, and so, yeah, it's a great marketing tool.
You know what you could do to explain away, like, why she threw the map and the compass away is she's devised this whole trip just to get back at her shitty boyfriend?
Yeah.
It's like, I know what'll really screw with him. Gonna murder him.
I got something that'll really grind his gears.
Using his love for documentaries and horror. Hey, babe. I heard there's this Blair Witch thing. We should go check it out.
The a lot of the buzz was around to all the animated films that are coming out this year. A lot of people are pegging Pixar to have a bounce back year after a couple years of struggling, which actually Elementals made a lot of money quietly last year. But Inside Out 2 is their most popular trailer ever. And when I was reading Variety about what they saw, I think they showed something like 10 minutes of the film. I guess the whole theater was just laughing and having a good time. So sounds like they have a winner on their hands with that one. Moana 2 is coming out. There's that Lord of the Rings animated movie that I've never seen anything about, but it keeps on saying it's coming out on Christmas. So yeah, interesting stuff coming out of CinemaCon.
Yeah, I mean, the stuff I'm most interested in seeing this year is already like in trailers, so it's gonna be interesting year.
Yep, because they also talked about how it's also a little quiet because of the writers and the actor strikes happening at the same time, and it really kind of hamstrung the release calendar. But in a way, I think it'll actually help Marvel. I'm still convinced that Deadpool and Wolverine is Deadpool going from multiverse to multiverse, killing all the other multiverse stuff, and kind of resetting the Marvel universe.
So basically, like, I think what they're going for with the, like, they're going to do through like five movies for the Kang storyline, and they're just going to do it with
just to do with Deadpool. He's the avatar.
Deadpool in one movie. Yeah.
Yeah. That's going to be my guess.
That's good. Get him back on track to just making good one-offs that sort of connect.
Yeah. And making,
until they can find their next Thanos idea.
Yeah. I like I do like all the movies that have come out in this phase, but I want it to be more focused. You know, there's an end to it.
Yeah, like a lot of them, there's just like a credit scene that just shows, hey, here's a new character in a costume. Not sure why or what it's building to, but there it is. It's in live action.
I like to see it be focused. So
enjoy this, nerds. Like, remember when Shang-Chi came out and like you got like de-hulked Bruce Banner back and they're talking about the rings and everything, and then just like we're like 10 movies away from that and like nothing's connected to it.
I know. And Shang-Chi was actually really fun.
Yeah.
So hopefully they revisit that world because I was interested. Anywho, we watch stuff throughout the week in a segment I call What We've Been Watching.
So, this is the stuff we've been watching.
Brad, what'd you watch this week?
Why is it the weeks we do film explosions are the weeks where I see just like a ton of stuff?
I don't know. You know, I usually take a break kind of when we do film explosions.
That's the opposite. That's funny.
Yeah, I watch some stuff, but I play like video games and stuff like that.
Yeah. So I'll just rush through a couple things. Going all the way back to Serpico, saw that for the first time.
Whoa, Serpico!
Be interested to see your take on it, since you're an actual police officer.
Yeah, I've never seen it.
Oh, all right then. Yeah, it's for those listening at home, it's from 1973, so you may not even ever heard about it. But, you know, I just remember it from Jane Silent Bob, which you quoted. That's the first time I heard it. But yeah, it's about a real life cop in New York who is dealing with like a corrupt police force. All the trouble that, you know, that going through that was.
Yeah, there's a great documentary. I forget what it's called, but it's about the corruption in New York City in like the early 80s. It's really fucking bad.
Yeah.
They were taking drugs and dealing them to drug dealers and killing them.
They were
their
own gang, yeah.
Yeah, it's a real thing.
So, yeah. Yeah, when you think of like grimy 80s New York, that's a good portrait of it. The other thing I watched is supposedly a classic Martin Scorsese movie called After Hours. Have you seen that one?
No.
No.
I'm not the biggest Scorsese fan.
I know. I appreciate his place in cinema history and everything, but like, you know, After Hours is this thing like, oh, this is a great Scorsese that everyone's kind of slept on. And nope. It's it's just weird, and like the concept is great. You know, that this guy played by, what's his name?
Griffin Robert Dunn. De Niro?
No, Griffin Dunn.
Al Pacino.
You'd think that. But no, Griffin Dunn, he's some Wall Street guy who's kind of, aloof. Basically like the only grounded, like resonant thing through the whole movie that I saw was that this guy never listens to anybody throughout the movie. He's like encountering all these people, but he's always talking to them, but never listening to what they have to say.
Just like my wife.
Hey-o. So yeah, he just goes on these like weird, like he gets off work and he's trying to relax, and then he just like runs into this woman played by Rosanna Arquette, and it just like starts out the string of like weird situations that he has to go through. All he wants to do is get back to his apartment after meeting her doesn't work out, and yeah, it's like these weird random things that don't like, I don't know, didn't seem like they meant anything. And the only like smart
sounds
thing
like
about
the Irish did.
Sure. That's, yeah, kind of, yeah, yeah.
Where it's just like a bunch of random scenes.
So yeah, I'd like to, someone who does like that movie, tell me why they like it, because it just seemed like a bunch of random nonsense. Yeah. One great thing I saw was Wicked Little Letters, which, Ryan, it's British, so definitely up your alley.
Oh, yeah. You know how I love the fucking Brits.
You do. You love your tea and crumpets.
Fucking A.
But no, it is a fun movie about, I think it's set in like 1910, 1920. And there's this little town where this Irish woman moves in, and her neighbor is a sweet middle-aged lady who lives with her dad still. And she is religious, and she kind of presents like, oh, you know, I'm a sweet religious person. We accept everybody. But Irish lady who moves in is just like, she's very nice and pleasant to everyone, but she has the mouth of a sailor. And so she doesn't fit in with this quiet little religious British town.
I've seen a trailer for this. Was this a Fantastic Fest film?
Yeah, maybe. I saw it at the Chez Artiste.
Sort of see the trailer for it somewhere.
But yeah, so one day the nice British lady's getting these like filthy little letters that are like calling her a whore and all that, and the town doesn't know who's doing it. But you know, if if you're smart, you kind of pretty obvious from like the get go what's going on. And then for the rest of the movie is just, you know, it happens more and more. And then the Irish lady gets arrested and, taken away from her kid. And, there's a police force where, an Indian woman, her dad used to work there. He died, I think, in the line of duty, and she's taken over. And because she's a woman in the police force in 1920, she's a woman police officer. Like that's her title. And, yeah, she wants to investigate further, but the bumbling idiot men there won't let her do it. And so she has to find her way around to help this woman who she thinks is innocent of writing these letters.
Isn't it astonishing when you think about that, that was only 100 years ago?
Yeah, it really is. Like, it's even more depressing that so much progress happened back then in 20 years than is happening today.
Exactly.
Yeah. Like, you think about, I was born in like 1982, and only 20 years before, yeah, like black people still couldn't, there's still segregation. That's just nuts.
Yep.
That's like being here today and looking back at me in high school. It's insane. So yeah, that was a lot of fun. So I like that movie. I saw Death Spa, just like 80s. Schlocky horror where a gym spa, really the whole gym, is possessed and kills people.
Nice.
That's dumb and stupid, but kind of fun. I saw Monkey Man, since I guess we're not going to probably do that as a weekly episode.
Yeah, because I fucked everyone over.
Yeah, you did. But Spider-Man's a priority. Awesome action movie. The dramatic part definitely is important as a story, but I just didn't get into it. Like, you could probably trim like 30 minutes of, Dev Patel's character, he's, from the slums. He gets a job in a restaurant washing dishes and just kind of rises up through the ranks. And meanwhile, there's like this oppressive government, there's election going on to pick like a new, I don't know what their president, prime minister, I don't know. But the one in power is oppressive, and his secondhand like guy who runs the whole police force killed Dev Patel's mom back in the day. So he's on this revenge quest, and there's all these like dramatic moments that tie into like the history of India that kind of slow the movie down. But when the action gets going, it's great.
Nice.
I saw 10 Things I Hate About You for the first time.
Oh, that movie's cute.
Yeah, it's got some weird dialogue, but it's a weird snapshot. Like, it's a snapshot of like early 2000s, late 90s teen comedy stuff that, and that school is like, what? People actually go to that? Like, that's a school? An active school in Washington. Yeah. Kind of blew my mind. It's like right next to the coast and like this weird Coliseum style, like football, half Coliseum football field. Yeah, anyway.
I was thinking of sing songs, dude.
Yeah, there's a lot of like cringy parts too, and yeah. I was indifferent to it. I saw Pitch Black, so my taste.
I love Vin Diesel.
The film that made Vin Diesel a star, or was that Fast and the Furious 1? yeah, that does not age well. Especially like CGI wise. But yeah, even his character of Riddick, I don't know.
Remember when we saw Riddick and they have that really misogynistic dialogue with that female character? That's the only thing I remember from it.
This is the only Riddick movie I've ever seen.
Oh.
Yeah.
I thought you saw, we did Riddick for an episode. Maybe
we
not.
Did, but I think it was just you and James, and I do remember you talking about that. But yeah, this is the first one I saw, and it's just another shitty like 2000s monster movie where all the characters make dumb decisions and get slaughtered. Rewatched Taxi Driver this time in the theater, and that's another meh for me. another Scorsese. You're just watching this guy Like, it's just a snapshot. Like, I don't really get what the point of it is, other than just like, you're just watching, it's a vibe. You're watching a vibe happen.
And is anybody really even talking to him? I don't know.
There's this one thing about Scorsese acts in it twice, which I didn't know before, or at least I don't remember knowing before. When Sybil Shepherd like first appears, he's like sitting on the side of the street, just like staring at her in the slow-mo shot, like in the background. And then of course he's in the backseat of the cab when he's like stalking his wife as that other character. But yeah, if I was a cinema purist and paying attention to like the movie being linear and making sense, it would not make sense that there's, unless that guy's twins, it would normally be considered a flub or a blooper or something.
He's definitely the worst part of Killers of the Flower Moon.
Gosh, I have so much left. Yeah, I saw Spring Breakers. That was meh. Did not, again, another like vibe movie of just like these girls being shitty and you know, being criminals and loving spring break super a lot. Yeah, and then I saw a documentary called Carol Doda Topless at the Condor at the Esquire, which is about a woman in San Francisco who was a club dancer. And the documentary seems like it was she was like the first person to go topless in a club, and that kind of introduced like strip clubs to California or whatever. And it's interesting, but like that's really all there is to it. And it's kind of seems like it's supposed to be a documentary of her life, but I'd say like three-fourths of it are like the 60s and 70s, and then they wrap up her life in like 2 minutes at the end of like, it's basically she got old and died from like the 80s onward, you know. Yeah. Yeah, but kind of interesting, a little slice of the country at that time that I didn't know that much about. Are we going to do a Civil War show? Probably not.
I don't know yet. Maybe. Probably not.
I'll talk about it anyway in case we don't. Yeah, I saw Civil War. Thankfully, not the movie I expected it to be. Very neutral. It's all about the journalists. They really don't dive into like specific politics on anything. Very fictionalized. But really only the good thing about it is like the tension. Like it creates a lot of great tension. Mm-hmm. Makes you really uncomfortable throughout the movie. And the action sequences are pretty good. But yeah, the story was like, eh, okay. Some of these journalists are shitty opportunists, and other ones are you know, doing their job properly and everything, and not and respecting the people they're taking photos of. So yeah, I think it's interesting. And then the last thing I watched was I finally got it in the mail, Joysticks.
Oh shit.
Yeah, which is 1983, another dumb 80s comedy where the plot is, you know, they have a video arcade, and there's a guy in town who thinks the video arcade is like not appropriate for kids. It's this wild video arcade that they got to shut down because it's the root of all sin in the town. It's going to corrupt their kids. It stars Joe Don Baker as that guy, who's like a powerful businessman who hates that his daughter goes to this video arcade and hangs out with all these, you know, gross nerds and jocks and dweebs and punks. And he's trying to get it shut down. And meanwhile, what's his name? His last name doesn't matter. Jeff runs the arcade. That
Tell me he needs to come up with like $5,000 in a week or it closes.
He doesn't. He just has to like prove to the town council that this stuff doesn't happen there. So he plots to frame Jodan Baker. By luring him into the arcade and then taking a salacious photo of them around like all the topless girls that hang out there and everything, and then show it to the town council to be like, see, he's the one who's actually the hypocrite here. So yeah, he, like The movie starts. Uncle Rico's in it. He plays King Vidiot, one of the punkers who hangs out at the theater, but he's not welcome there because I don't know. And then there's what's the character? McDorfus. He's basically the Bluto of the crew, who's really good at the games, but he's gross to be around. Who else? Yeah. It's a, yeah, the arcade is like an arcade you would never see anywhere. It's really like they have like the big screen video games with like one giant joystick 30 years before that's a thing. And they're all Pac-Man. Like every game is Pac-Man, basically, with reskinned graphics. Except for, what's it called? Something Hollow. Ghost Hollow or something. Apparently that was a game that Nintendo was like coming out with that they loaned to the movie before it came out. I don't think that's true, but that's what the director said in the commentary. Because I was like, he even refers to Pac-Man as a Nintendo game. I was like, that's a Namco game, buddy.
Yeah. way to do research, director.
Yeah. But yeah, it's just one of those movies where it's just like targeted to kids in the 80s, and like most of the girls are topless most of the time. McDorfus just farts to get out of situations. The guy who owns Jefferson Bailey, who runs his big backstory is he runs the arcade, but he can't play the games because he has a traumatic game related past. And, traumatic thing is that he was hooking up with his girl, in his like video game room, and her dad came in and like slapped her around. And from then on, he couldn't play the video games. So when he's challenged at the end to do a rival video game challenge, that's his struggle, is flashing back that night. Yeah. But then his grandfather shows up in a wheelchair and he's found her. She's come back into the town, away from her father, and everything's good again.
Nice.
Yeah, it's stupid and great at the same time. That's all I watch. Just so much. I'm sorry.
It's all good. I watched Fitzwillie, which is and I loved that movie. I thought it was really charming and fun. He's great in it.
I don't remember much because I watched it like on Netflix, I don't know, like 12, 15 years ago.
He plays the butler who also runs a crime ring, but they only steal from other rich people to fund the lifestyle of this woman who husband was supposed to be super rich and take care of her, but it turns out he was broke. So Fitzwillie's dad was the butler before too, so he steals from other rich people to generate money so this woman can live the lifestyle that her deceased husband intended for her to live.
That's right. Yeah. So he's basically becoming her benefactor for all the years that he's employed her.
And then they have kind of an Ocean's 11 huge caper at the end to get $100,000 from a department store. And it's just a really fun movie. And I had a blast watching it because it's definitely in Dick Van Dyke's wheelhouse. He's funny. There's some physical comedy in it, and he's charming. It's a fun movie. It's one that I got last year for Kino Lorber's sale. And I'm doing this thing where I randomly assigned numbers to all the Blu-rays that I own that I haven't watched, and it picked that one. So I was excited. I also rewatched Deliver Us From Evil, which is a Scott Derrickson film from Colorado. He directed Sinister, and he is a writer on a lot of things. In it, Eric Bana plays a New York Police Department sergeant, and he's investigating these men who came back from the Middle East from the war, and they're behaving in unusual ways, and it leads into kind of a possession movie. Well made. If I had one complaint, there's nothing really shocking or, you know, that memorable about the horror aspect. But there's a couple police officer moments that they get right about the toll that the job takes on you if you don't take care of yourself.
So it can be a little more evil.
Yes. So it is interesting seeing that again. And then I also watched Attack the Block, which that movie came out in 2011. Can you believe that?
Yeah.
And, you know, when you see John Boyega, he looks like a teenager in it, because he is.
Yeah.
But just super young. And, I mean, the film's about these aliens that crash into a thing they call the Block in England, which I'm guessing is their like projects where, you know, people that don't have as much money live in these not nice apartments. And there's an allegory there of, you know, the police not helping them, but they're also criminals. So, but they're a product of being in the Block, but they have to want to protect it too. And the monsters, it's pretty, I forgot how gory it was. I hadn't seen it in a really long time.
Yeah, I haven't seen it since 2011, I think.
Yeah, it's the first time I saw it since the theaters. It was one of those, I don't know why I didn't get it on Blu-ray when it came out, but it's another one that when I saw it used, I got because it, you know, it was like $4 or $5. And I still really liked it. I liked it when I saw it. I liked it when I watched it again. The creatures in it are pretty creative. And there's some really cool visual things, and of some of the gang members, the kids meet some pretty gruesome death. So they don't pull punches just because they're younger kids.
I think I passed on like the Blu-ray when it came out, but I think because I thought like there'd be a better version because it was such like a cult hit.
So it's an early Blu-ray, and there is some crushing of the black, and it kind of gets speckled throughout. So it's definitely not, doesn't have a very high resolution, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
If they made a 4K of it and they smoothed it out, it'd look amazing. And the last thing I watched, I actually saw in the theaters yesterday before we saw Spider-Man, the 45th anniversary of Dawn of the Dead was playing at Alamo, and it was cool to watch it again. I hadn't seen it in a really long time, and it's still one of my most favorite horror movies.
Had you seen it in the theater before?
No, I had never seen it in the theater.
Yeah.
So I was pretty excited to see it in the theater as well. The only bummer was there's this couple in there that was laughing all the time at stupid things. And I don't know if it's because they were uncomfortable with the horror aspect of it. Because, you know, the thing with Romero films is there's some acting in it that's not the best, because he gets, you know, he makes independent films, so they're not all going to be accomplished actors. But all his films have this uncomfortableness about the film. There's a social commentary, usually, and there's this always this looming sense of dread, even though what people think of zombies, you know, nowadays with The Walking Dead or Dawn of the Dead remake, where they're all crazy running zombies, wasn't a thing back then. So, you know, the film is a sequel to Night of the Living Dead, and it opens with the beginning of the plague and what people are doing and how they're going to get out of their situation. And, you know, the police go to a project, and it's full of Puerto Ricans and African Americans. So they're there to bust somebody, but they find out that the dead have infiltrated it too. The gore effects are obviously the highlight of it too. It's kind of silly cartoon color though. The blood looks like paint. The zombies have a blue tint to them. But yeah, the movie's great. I hadn't seen it in a while, and I forgot how propulsive it was and how it moves really quickly. I think it's over 2 hours, but it definitely doesn't feel like it. There's a lot happening in it, and yeah, it's just a really great movie. And have you seen the original Dawn of the Dead?
I think I have. I don't remember. Maybe just the how was the one from like 85?
Day of the Dead.
That's probably, yeah, I think that's what I'm thinking of.
I mean, I did pick that for one of our films of the week when during COVID.
Yeah, that's probably it then.
Yeah, well, Dawn of the Dead, they go to a mall, and it's, you know.
Yeah, I saw the Zack Snyder remake, yeah.
Yeah, and this one, it's like a take on consumerism. They mentioned that, why are they coming to the mall? And it's because it's something they once did, and they don't know. And yeah, this one, where Day of the Dead, you know, you don't really like the characters at all in it. This one has likable characters. And I mean, my favorite, it's 45 years old. There's a part at the end where one guy's going to kill himself, but then he realizes that he wants to live. And they play this, I want to say it's like, if I had to pick a 1979 theme for Captain America, it would be this theme, because the music does not fit the rest of the movie. It's like he decides he's not going to shoot himself, and then he jumps down and starts punching zombies, and it goes, dun, 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 dun. I guess like A-Team.
Yeah, it sounds like the A-Team theme.
And that's what he does, and it's like really out of place, but it works really well, and you laugh at it because he's just like kicking zombies and knocking them over and shit. But it's fun. Definitely check it out. That's all I watched. Next week, we're seeing Abigail. Will be our film of the week.
Okay.
Yep. I want to see it. It's by the Radio Silence guys. I heard it's really good. It's right now on Rotten Tomatoes, it's at 93%. So,
yeah, that's fun. I liked Ready or Not, so.
Yeah, it kind of looks like a vampire version of it.
Yeah.
It's kind of the same premise. But I want to see it, so that's what we're doing.
Yeah, real quick, I forgot to mention, I'll be up in Wyoming for Wyoming PopCon. And yeah, that'll be the last weekend of April, so come say hi.
Yeah, we'll have stuff there. Well, you'll have stuff there. Yep. I'll be working.
Just me. So, if you've always wanted to meet Brad, just I doubt, I'll be there representing.
I do. Well, thanks for doing that, Brad.
Yeah, I need like a little weekend excursion, so interesting. It's in Casper, Wyoming, so all of our Wyoming fans, check it out.
Heck yeah. Until next week, we'll see you at the movies.
Life is a great big pain. Wherever there's a pain, you'll find a Spider-Man.
Thanks for listening to Real Nerds Podcast, a Nebulous Visions production. Stream or download episodes, read articles at realnerdspodcast.com. Stream us on Apple or Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or iHeartRadio. Follow us on Facebook, Real Nerds Podcast. Twitter and Instagram, at Real Nerds. Watch us on YouTube, Real Nerds Podcast. Email us at realnerds@gmail.com. Call us at 720-6NERDS5. Thank you to Sparks Mandrill, Mike at Plan 9 Studios, and Bolognium for all of our groovy theme songs. And that's how you fucking do it!